Today, the federal government will unveil plans for a national leadership summit to tackle domestic violence against First Nations women. The summit is going to be given the job of developing a new national plan specifically designed to address the tragically high levels of sexual assault and violence against Indigenous women and children. Social Justice Commissioner June Oscar and academic and Indigenous leader Marcia Langton have been appointed special advisers to lead this process. Ken Wyatt is the Federal Minister for Indigenous Australians. Ken Wyatt, welcome back to Breakfast.
It's good to be with you, Fran, given it's your last 2 weeks, and I equate you to Michelle Grattan in terms of being a constant voice on political issues across this nation. So it'll be sad to see you go.
Well, not the constancy nor the excellence of Michelle Grattan, but thank you very much, Minister. Minister, Indigenous women have called for this separate national plan and to tackle domestic violence and sexual violence with Indigenous women. Is this summit an acknowledgement that, you know, until now, all the national policies to end violence really have failed Indigenous women? I mean, that's what the stats reveal pretty clearly.
Well, it is. And June's work and consultation with over 1,000 women across this country and young girls as well has really brought home a number of critical issues that all governments have to address, not just the federal. Every state and territory government needs to look at what we're doing to address the levels of violence and sexual abuse within Aboriginal communities and within urban settings as well. And June's work is a landmark report because it does highlight not just that, but women in leadership, women in education, and successes in other areas, because historically our women have been the backbone of our communities.
In terms of a summit, when's it going to be held, this summit, and what's to stop it being just another talk fest? I mean, you know, a lot is known already. I think there would be, you know, there's very strong, as you've said, including June Oscar and others, very strong female Indigenous leadership who'd be ready to get going, I reckon, on this.
Well, when you had the combination of two incredibly strong women like Marcia and June, combined with many others who've worked in this area for a long time and they've become frustrated with the lack of progress, this summit won't be just a talk fest. It'll be designed by them in a way that we have tangible outcomes. In one sense, Fran, I see it being equivalent to the closing the gap approach, where we had 51 Aboriginal peak organisations sitting and negotiating strategies, mm-hmm. setting targets, and eventually ticking off on every word that we developed together. So it'd be a co-design and a commitment from government, as you've seen in the closing the gap approach, and I would expect us to do the same following the Women's Summit.
And will there be a funding commitment to match? I mean, the statistics are clear. Indigenous, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women, 32 times more likely to be hospitalised and 11 times more likely to die from gender-based violence. At the moment, this summit comes with an injection of $2.8 million for research funding. But will there be a significant injection of funds to back up the plan that comes out of this summit? Will you give that guarantee?
Yes, I will, because it is important that we do that. But I think we also have to look at all of the programs that currently exist and work out why our women and not accessing them or not being given access to them, because there is substantial Commonwealth funding and state and territory funding that is targeted towards dealing with these issues. Mm. But what I'm seeing is our women do not access them, or the organisations are not being inclusive to the extent that I thought they might, given the rates.
Do you think that's happening, that organisations aren't inclusive, that Indigenous women are being left out?
Well, look, there are programs that when I was working in WA where funding was given to what we called SARCs, Sexual Assault Referral Centres, and I know that our women did not go to them. This is based on the Sue Gordon report. And when we found additional funding out of the health budget I had, we found the take-up by having culturally appropriate programs was much higher and greater. And even our own Commonwealth program at the Family Violence and Legal Services programs, our women leading those access families, they understand the kinship relationship networks within a community, and they have a sense of who is vulnerable, and they certainly connect with them and assist them.
Can we go to vaccinations now? In the Northern Territory, there are currently 51 cases of COVID, and that's related to the outbreak around Katherine, most of it. Health services are currently going door to door in an attempt to lift low vaccination rates. How concerned, how extensive do you fear this outbreak could be? And, you know, is enough being done to sort of head it off at the pass? We spoke with John Patterson from the Peak Aboriginal Health Group this week, and he said, you know, they're in urgent need of a surge workforce to get in there and get vaccinations going.
Surge workforce, he's right on that issue, because people go into organisations, the way in which they work is dealing with primary healthcare. But when you get a surge in demand, then it's a case of finding the additional nurses that are available. But I'm pleased that the results in the territory now are 78% of Indigenous Australians 16 and over have had their first vaccination, and 57 have received their second dose.
So, and that's, I mean, that's a great product. Improvement, I think, from the last time we spoke. But still, a large number of Aboriginal communities still have a vaccination rate below 50%, and a quarter, I've read, have rates of less than 25%. So it's still unacceptably low. Greater Katherine and Robinson River, including surrounding homelands, went into lockdown 10 days ago. Indigenous organisations want the border reopening plan for December 20th in the territory to be delayed. They warn, you know, that should have to reach the target of 80% fully vaccinated by that date. First doses would have to be administered this week. Do you support the call for the territory to delay the reopening, the border general border reopening plan?
I see. In one sense, if we have the majority of people with vaccinations who want the freedom to move, then we should consider that in this context. But there are communities where the vaccination rates are low, and they are now being targeted with ACOs, with GPs, and with access to any available program that we're able to put into place. So we're looking at every possibility, including door-to-door, working with families. But the ACOs have done a brilliant job in concert with Northern Territory Health in order to reach out to as many communities as possible. The concern I do have are those who are moving back into homeland communities and thinking that the isolation will keep them safe. But we've seen that by one person coming into the region, we now have that number has reached an unacceptable level. And people are scared. In talking with people out there, there is fear.
Yeah, and you can see why when you look at what's happening there around some of these small communities. What's your view on mandates, Ken White? We spoke with Clive Palmer earlier. He says he doesn't believe there should be lockdowns and legislation mandating vaccines. What's your response to him saying mandates aren't necessary when some remote Indigenous communities are in lockdown and some may need to stay in lockdown for a lot longer after the territory opens up just to keep themselves safe?
Well, one of the things we've got to respect is that vaccines remain voluntary, but we're encouraging people to be vaccinated to protect themselves, particularly in the Aboriginal community where there are chronic health conditions, there is a high degree of vulnerability because of the health conditions that many have. I had mine because I'm an asthmatic. I don't want to have COVID because I know the impact it has on your lungs and your breathing capacity. So I've had both mine as a preventative and as a protection. Now, I do respect those who choose not to, and that choice remains theirs. And we've always said there's a choice.
And how does that choice fit with vaccine mandates?
Well, state governments are mandating.
Mm-hmm. And do you support that or do you think they shouldn't?
Well, if in my own state, vaccination rates in a number of Aboriginal communities and in wheatbelt towns in some locations are extremely low and they are concerning. But you also have people who are arguing that they want within the workplace to be protected from COVID and want a safe in working environment. So you've got tensions that state governments are managing and you have tensions within the workplace. But I want to focus on our communities and the vulnerability of our people to encourage vaccination so that we don't lose. We've already lost 16 in the nation. Yeah. I don't want to see it large numbers because we can't afford to. Our knowledge and our history is with our storytellers. Our people are living books. We don't write our stories down. They are transmitted by art, storytelling, and passing on of knowledge from elders.
Ken Wyatt, can I ask you on another issue? Media reports very recently, in the last week or so, have said that legislation for an Indigenous voice to the Parliament is imminent. Is that true? Will we see a bill introduced this fortnight?
I'm just going through the processes, and as soon as I complete those, then I will make that announcement. And if it happens next week or later, if it happens next week, Fran, I'll let you know.
Can we expect it? Is that your aim, to get it in by next week?
No, I'm working on it so that it's not that I don't want to have a premature approach that causes people to want to oppose it. And I want to work through this so that we get it right. Our people have got it right. The report that they have come back with make a strong argument for the local voice and regional voices, because that's where they believe the strength of them having a say is. And then the national voice will evolve. And the report also sets out an ethical process and a set of principles that they want their local voices to have. Then they want to have more say.
So what's your concern? What would make this divisive? What are you still concerned about that you want to try and work on before you introduce this? Because if it's not next week, it may not be before a next election. And Tom Calmer, the co-chair of the Voice Design Panel, says he's very keen for this to go to happen before the election.
I'm equally keen too, but I just don't want to get this one wrong, because we have waited for a long time since the abolition of the ATSIC Regional Council.
So what are you worried about getting wrong?
Well, I just want to make sure that the structures and the funding that is required is in place. And I just want to be true to the voices that have come back in that report. So I've just got a couple of little things to do, because we've had 18 months of co-design, and it was done that way deliberately because I wanted the views of our people at the community level. And in the report, it says very clearly that we are to get it right.
Can I just ask you very briefly and finally, because, you know, it feels like we're in election campaign mode already, to be honest. There is a push to make voters present ID when they cast their ballot. This is a push by the government. Do you fear that could disenfranchise Indigenous Australians, and what could be done to mitigate that? I mean, that's some Indigenous Australians feel that.
No voter will be denied the right to vote. And the identification can be done by land councils, Aboriginal organisations. They can verify an individual.
Yeah, but that's a demand, isn't it? That's a lot of red tape, and it's not so easy necessarily.
Oh, look, we've not had the problem in the territory previously.
Why do we need this now then? If we've not had a problem, why do we need it?
Well, we do. We have had people who've done multiple voting.
Vanishingly small number, according to the Electoral Commissioner.
Well, this is to ensure that they don't do that in the future, because look, I had a marginal seat to begin with. If I'd had somebody do multiple voting, then I might have won that seat, because somebody, and I do know someone who came and saw me and told me that they had voted 17 times for me in 17 booths. Now, that person was fined, and if I'd won by 16 votes in a very tight margin, it would have meant the candidate, Sharon Jackson, would have lost the seat because somebody had done the wrong thing.
Okay. Minister, thank you very much for joining us again on Breakfast.
And you take care, Fran, and all the best for your future.
Thank you very much. Ken Wyatt is the Federal Minister for Indigenous Australians.